Everybody, and welcome to episode 414 of the Saturn Studs podcast. I'm Kurt, joined once again this week by my lesbian co-host, Peter and Jake.
Kurt going in for the kill immediately.
My co-hosts are Peter and Jake, and I don't believe they are technically lesbians.
No,
unless I do believe they are both
into
women.
Snarky Gen X comedian. I like women. I'm a lesbian. That never works. Guys, that never works. If you thought it did, it doesn't. We're coming at you. It's just a PSA. Just for all the tiny babies, the little kids who watch our show, you know, toddlers. We've never thought of that before.
Watch this very age-appropriate
Absolutely.
Show.
Shall we? Turn this off.
In between Puppy Pals, Blue Guy,
Paw Patrol,
Puppy Pals.
I'm sure there was a show called Puppy
First
Pals
of all,
at one point.
We're an anti Paw Patrol household.
Okay,
don't make me go into
Peppa Patrol.
Is it because of the German Shepherd police dog?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck Chase.
Glad to know that you take memes to that extent.
I see. I have not heard of this.
All cop dogs are bad. Fuck 12.
ACDAB. Yeah, this week, coming at you with the running back edition of the cast. I don't know. If it were me, they'd be running forward. Just seems more efficient that way.
They should probably change that name, running forward. I like that.
Well, technically, the position's name is halfback.
But they have...
Where are they in the half of?
Well, I don't know. The same place that the quarterback is the quarter of.
Damn, what does it take to get a...
halfback, fullback.
I was going to say, what does it take to get a fullback on the team? But there are... There is a position called fullback.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yes. That's why they're all called that.
Yeah, I stopped my joke. Just take two of them. You got a fullback.
It's almost like I'm not talking shit.
I'd also...
No.
Another good name, running legs.
But why is a quarterback half the halfback? He's like a lot of part of the team.
Well, you see when football was invented,
Nickelback?
I don't think the forward... I don't think the forward pass came.
What about Hollaback?
Well, no.
I think it. If I had to guess, now I'm talking shit. Now this is completely made up bullshit that I'm about to spit right now. But back when football was first invented, there was no third forward pass, and so everything was like a triple option sweep. And you'd have the quarterback, he'd stand like a quarter length behind the offensive line. Yeah. The halfback would stand a half length behind the offensive line. And the fullback would stay a full length behind the offensive line. They'd all sweep out to one side, pitching it as the offensive line tried to block everyone.
I believe it only because you didn't specify what a length was. And this comes from the same era where drinks are measured in parts. And I'm like, when I was learning to mix cocktails, I'm like, what the fuck is a part? What is this shit?
Come on.
You know, a part, a cup with a thingy, a little filler of a thing. We're the 1800s. Just, who needs to use units of measurement?
Well, it was all relative measurement, I believe.
You know, you get your classic cocktails, your one part whiskey with your two part
whiskey.
Salamander's tooth. And then you gotta do a half a part of Witch's Bane, and you got yourself a Rocky Road ice cream. There you go.
You gotta throw some aquafaba in there and shake it up.
You know what?
It makes a good whip.
You freeze some Faygo, put those in as ice cubes. Now you got yourself an insane clown posse.
Is that just a Faygo on ice, Jake?
Yeah, Faygo on ice.
Speaking of insane clowns.
No, the Faygo is the ice. And then once you're done with it, once you're done with your main drink, after you've got a little bit of Faygo in it, you then get your full Faygo when the ice melts. It's so stupid. Anyways, we're coming at you live from a carnival. I got it. Sit on down. 25 cents per ball. Give us a dollar. Get four throws. Say, I got it. I got it.
Are you...
Throw the ball. Sit. Please remain seated. Throw the ball over the plexiglass. Try to get bingo. Say, I got it. We'll put a washer. When
I don't actually think I've played this game. I've been in New York before.
You gotta toss the ball up. Don't throw it too high.
That's true. I'm currently in New York still, but I've also been here before.
It's a New York exclusive game, only found in New York. It's called I Got It. When you win, you say, I got it. Come on down, sit on down, all ages, grandmas, babies.
We always played these. We had our carnival had coin pusher, throw the ball into the cup of water and pick up the rubber duck, the game. It was duck roulette where it'd be like 20 ducks floating on a little lazy river and you grabbed a duck.
I do know that game.
You fished it out when it came by and had a number on it. If it was a winning number, you won.
It was a staple of like Six Flags Darien Lake. But the trick was that everyone was a winner. Sure. You just got shittier prizes if you didn't win. It's hard.
This is how our carnival operated. It's like you could actually win prizes, but they were like $2, like really rip off shit. So they were making a profit either way. They didn't really care. Yeah. And to win big prizes,
and that's $2. Like retail, not wholesale.
Oh, yeah, they actually set it up so that you couldn't win. There was no the big prize. You had to win small prizes and trade them in. You had to build up to the big prize.
It's the fucking greatest scam in the world.
Are you guys up to speed on your recent Carney Union news?
No. Is that what you've been doing?
Carneys have a union?
Well, it's an election year, man. Every election year, they always come out and find a special.
There's a clown joke in here somewhere.
Come on,
there's an elected
come on,
clown
Jet.
Joke in
yeah,
here
we
somewhere.
Yeah, we had the perfect transition like 3 minutes ago.
Where?
But we had to get in all your bullshit, didn't we, Jake?
Shit, what was the transition? No, go back.
You said that's an insane clown posse,
oh,
and I said, speaking of insane clowns.
Oh, yeah, true. Okay, we'll bring it back. Come on, Jack. We got to get back to the, you know, my corn pop took me to go see a clown a long time ago. He was making
your corn pop?
Gaga.
What the
fuck? Come on, Jack. Hey, now.
Jake has completely lost his marbles.
Jake, stop talking. Speak no evil. Trailer on Trey
when
Watch.
When you turn 30, everything goes to shit.
Apparently.
And then one day you just wake up covered in jism. Like,
are you telling me I only got 5 months to live?
Like Daisy Ridley.
We just all talk about our own trailer at the same time.
We transitioned to three different movies.
Everyone complained about how long Trey Watch was, so we're going to do this shotgun approach to see if it speeds up the show.
We're doing it in parallel.
We're going to mute each other. And then when we're all done, we're going to hold up the what's up, brother. We're going to hold up the what's up, brother. And then that's how we're going to know we're all done. We're going to mute each other. We're all going to talk about a different trailer. And then we're just gonna upload it. We're not even gonna listen to it.
Not even gonna edit. Not gonna sync anything up. Just gonna throw it in there and hope for the best.
Oh my god,
Jinx! But no, we're gonna settle which trailer we talk about the real way with I Got It.
I got it.
You got it.
I'll pass along my Daisy Ridley. One and
we'll get to
we can talk
we'll
about,
get to that later. Yeah, we'll speak
let's,
about.
Let's sit on Joker and we'll talk about Speak No Evil because that's the one I watched the least of.
Yeah,
I don't think I watched any of it. So go ahead, Peter.
It is kind of effective as a horror trailer. Like, so the premise is family meets other family on vacation and they're like totally chill and they're cool and they're like come over to our house. but their house is a creepy murder house out in the woods. And they're like, we're not doctors. What are you talking about? Oh, I thought you said you were a doctor. No, we cut our kid's tongue out. We definitely abuse him. Now you're in our murder shack in the woods or on the coast, not in the woods, but it's near the woods. So you can run through the woods. But this is every millennial's nightmare about hanging out. This is what everyone pictures. This is social anxiety personified. What if my friends who I'm hanging out with and having a good time with are actually secret murderers?
Everyone's like, oh, I can't wait to like be that like couple that meets a fun other couple on a trip and then go hang out with them and we'll be best friends for life and then they're just murderers. Or they're just weird. I don't know. I don't know what's worse.
Am I overreacting? I'm at this family's house and their kid is really quiet and he threatens them with punching all the time. And when I look closely, he doesn't say anything. When I look close, his tongue was missing. I think these guys might be abusive, but am I overreacting, Reddit? No, that's okay. Just how their family lives.
Definitely overreacting.
Watching this without context and like no audio is really funny. There's the scene where the guy walks into the tool shop and he like looks ominously at like the wall of the shadow board of tools. Normal. That's normal. And then James McAvoy, Professor X, fucking turns around with a drill. And the drill bit's improperly put in there, and he's just going, and it's going. It just seems like it should be like a 90s ABC Family like intro to a sitcom.
Yeah,
it's like, and Professor X,
about a dad who's not really good at doing stuff around the house.
Uh-oh, I cut my wife's finger off.
Whoa.
Aren't you guys doctors?
I like the one where James McAvoy, like, he's like, his kid's square dancing, and he's like, no, you're not square dancing good enough.
Dude, that gave me trauma. I feel like my dad would do that.
It would just, yeah.
I've never seen my dad dance, but, like, that, if anybody's going to have secret dance.
I feel like that's a secret, like, ingrained trauma, even though if you never had that happen, like being at a party and everyone's chill and you're like doing a dance or like singing a song or whatever, and like all of a sudden now you're on the spot to be quality, like no,
what we practiced
being someone with musical talent at a party for family, and they're like, Peter, sing for us, do a song. I'm like, no, none of my songs are like catchy songs that people would care to listen to at social events. it's like Italian choral solos for school.
It's fucking Handel.
Yeah, exactly. It's Caro Mio Bien. I don't think you want to hear that. I'm just saying.
Why is James McAvoy so good at being an insane person?
He can smile with evil in his eyes. That's what it is.
That's true.
All right. Let's move on to the next trailer, which I guess we can be the young woman in the
sea. Yeah, hell yeah.
Get it? Because the old man in the sea? Wow.
Yeah. I'm almost certain this was like a gag title on an episode of Arrested Development.
Yeah.
But so this movie is the underdog story of Trudy Ederle, who was the first in 1926, became the first woman swimming across the English Channel. This movie makes it seem like everyone doubted her and wanted her to fail. But here's the thing. She had already been an Olympic medalist in 1924. And the year before, she slammed 22 miles across the New York Harbor. So no reasonable person would have expected her to fail to swim across the English Channel. Yeah,
this feels like an exaggerated parody of based on a true story movies where they have to where they're forced to ramp up the tension to make things really exciting. I know it's Jerry Bruckheimer, but it doesn't have that magic.
It doesn't mean
I think my favorite like exaggeration in this is like she's in the trailers, like she's doing the swimming, she's in the chain.
My favorite exaggeration in this is Daisy Ridley's accent.
Right? Was Trudy American? Okay.
Yeah. She's from Jersey.
But this takes place in English. In English. In England.
Yes, it does.
So they got Daisy Ridley to play the American in England.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Do you wonder why Disney's losing money on the film division?
I just love the scene here where she's like swimming the channel and she's like, oh no, jellyfish, watch out. And it's like,
you just swim over them, nerd.
I'm pretty sure it's the Northern English, like it's the North Atlantic. I don't know how many stinging jellyfish there are in the channel.
Can't imagine many.
I'm pretty sure they're just the dumb jellyfish that float around.
Yeah.
And don't hurt people. That seems like, yeah, that was like a story that Trudy had. She's like, oh yeah, no, I had to swim through like jellyfish at one point. It was kind of wild. Like, shit, we're going to make a 5-minute sequence on that in the movie. Yeah, I don't, it's,
yeah,
it's trying too hard.
These movies always...
If it's trying too hard in the trailer, I don't know how that bodes for the movie.
In these movies, I think they kind of send a bad message, right? Because it's always, like, no one ever tries to achieve something out of, like, personal pride or accomplishment. They do it to spite someone.
Yeah.
Which is not a good way to live your life.
I thought this movie was already made before, because I've seen a bunch of like TikTok clips of people helping assisting and making sure they're okay when they're making this like really long swim. But it was an older lady who was doing it, and it was a movie called Naiad. It's on Netflix. Annette Bening and Jodie Foster star in it, and it's a movie about a 60-year-old. Lady who just has the dream of swimming, like, I guess there's a swim channel competition thing from Cuba to Florida, which is a fucking insane distance, but a 110-mile open ocean swim. And she just swims in.
See, that's like, that's immediately more engaging to me, because, like, I can see how there's a story about that. Like, you have the person with the dream who has a very clear like barrier to achieving it, and like in a unique way, and that like with her age, and it's like, okay, now you have to show how does she overcome the social issue, you know, the social barrier, the physical barrier, the mental barrier, you know, these all, it sets up all these arcs where you get over the problems.
Oh, okay, so this movie exists because of this one little tidbit I found on the Wikipedia page, which is, I guess, not about this particular swim, so they're conflating things. But in 1925, the Women's Swimming Association sponsored Helen Wainwright and Edderly for an attempted swimming across the English Channel. Helen Wainwright canceled due to an injury, so Edderly decided to go to France on her own. She trained with Jabez Wolf, a swimmer who had attempted to swim the English Channel 22 times. On August 18, 1925, she made her first attempt at swimming the channel, where she was disqualified when Wolf ordered another swimmer to recover her from the water. She bitterly disagreed with Wolf's decision and was speculated that he did not want her to succeed.
Okay. Well, then, yeah.
That's...
Well, shit, make a story about those two then. Like...
Yeah.
This should have been a rivalry story. Or, like, you know, they sound like a lot of interesting individual characters.
I mean,
in this
feel
story,
like that might be
that you could have portrayed by actors, but they don't feature anyone except for Daisy Ridley's character in this. I don't feel like.
Well, they show shots. They give close ups of people who I have to assume are going to be major characters.
Yeah, it's, and if they, you know, if that's the case, I mean, maybe that'll be a. It'll be better than I imagined, but then that just means this is not a good trailer.
Yeah.
Let me see if there's any.
Yeah. For a better
bad information on like IMDb.
for a better, definitely totally based on a true story movie, Fly Me to the Moon. Guys, the trailer teaser led us to this. We knew this was going to happen because Scarlett Johansson was on the phone last week.
She called us personally to let us know it was going down. This is bizarrely a Hollywood twin to Unfrosted.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It's a highly exaggerated, you know, they don't even say based on a true story. Wild.
Because it's not really
60s story, like a larger than life tale of how the people who had to market the moon landing program.
Yeah, it's a comedy drama, as self-described comedy drama, starring Scarlett Johansson, Channing Tatum. You also see Woody Harrelson, Ray Romano, and Jim Rash in this. It looked pretty good. There were some jokes that got me in the trailer, and
I
will watch this when it comes out, probably.
Yeah, I like this. This looks like fun. It looks like...
That being said, a lot of Apple TV original movies have looked good in the trailer, but have disappointed.
An Apple product looking slick and marketable, and then not delivering performances as advertised? You would never.
I know. Unprecedented.
But... No, this is, yeah, like it's star-studded. Yeah, very clean looking. I, you know, it enticed me. Wowza.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll find our way to it.
I mean, it looks good. It's just, I mean, maybe I'm just falling for the Hollywood trope, but it just reminds me of every trailer like we've ever seen. But that's a formula that works, I guess.
I was about to say, if so many trailers do it, there's probably a reason.
I mean, I like the actors. The story seems like it's pretty solid. And I think the comedy element in the drama will actually kind of work pretty well. So
yeah, this looks like...
I really enjoyed
it.
It looks
like they didn't just like put in the two jokes they had in the movie, like some really thin on the ground comedies where it's like, we have two big jokes and we're gonna put them both in the trailer. Like, this definitely makes me feel like, oh, there's gonna be like other comedy. It's gonna be full of like comedy and good writing.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the best jokes, one of the best jokes in the trailer is just like a little quip in one scene when they're having Jim Rash kind of have a meltdown on set and Scarlett Johansson,
because they're trying to fake
like
the moon landing.
Oh, we got Kubrick.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're filming a backup in case the real one doesn't work. And she says, oh, we should have gotten Kubrick. And the rumor was long standing that Stanley Kubrick was the one who directed the fake moon landing.
Yeah. And I love the accompanying joke of if Stanley Kubrick directed it, he would have had them film on location.
Yeah.
That's okay. Funny.
That's funny.
That's funny.
You know who loves jokes?
Ryan Reynolds?
Maxine.
Yeah, we'll do Maxine. It's
yeah.
This is like a full-fledged fucking movie. Like franchise now.
Yeah.
I thought there was only going to be the three.
Boy, Mia Goth just keeps doing the same thing.
I kind of like it as like
over and over again.
The way they took it, where it's like this like spiritual kind of franchise.
Yeah, but with the same actress.
Yeah. It's like a more cohesive Cloud Atlas. this time she is a starlet Mia Goth is a starlet in the 80s.
Aspiring starlet.
Yes, trying to move out of the world of adult entertainment into the more legitimate scene of movies. And she has to contend.
And possibly murdering all the competition.
Because yeah. there's, you can, give you three guesses who the Night Stalker on the loose throughout Hollywood is. Watch it be the Swerve, it and her? It's not her.
Is it not Mia Goth?
Yeah. That'd be an interesting twist, but I'm pretty sure it is her.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because she's the one who killed people in, like, X and Pearl. Pearl.
Yeah.
I gotta fucking watch this.
She played two characters in X. She played both the murderer and the murderee. Yeah. And the final girl.
Was this only the third movie? I thought this was the fourth.
Also named Maxine.
I knew they were going to do a trilogy.
No, it's the third. That's why it's XXX.
Oh, okay. Maxine. Well, that makes sense. Because, okay, I thought... That's why I was surprised when I first saw them. Like, I thought they already did three. Like, and they planned to do three.
Iconography.
Yeah. But no, okay, this is the third. This was the planned third. That makes sense to me now. Brain satisfied.
Yep. And one of Mia Goth's characters in X was named Maxine with a single X. Mm. I wonder if there was a double X in Pearl.
I don't know.
Where's the second X?
Where's the missing link?
The missing link might be Lady Gaga in Joker.
Madame Gaga and the Coldplay.
What is this? Folie à deux?
Fooly ducks.
I don't speak freaky deaky French.
Foil ducks.
Joker folie à deux.
Fall of ducks, yeah.
Folie à deux, of course, means the foil of aluminum.
The entirety of the deuce. this is...
They're taking it in a much more colorful... It's a lot more colorful than I thought it would be.
It's a good adaptation of La La Land.
There's going to be a lot of this movie that we are not going to know whether it's inside of his head or real life.
Like the first one?
And it's going to throw us through a loop. And now he's in love, again, with Lady Gaga, who plays Harley Quinn. Which they're doing a different take on her story. It seems like Harley is not a doctor there. She's a
patient.
Or is she? That might be part of his hallucination.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, she could be made up for all we know. And then it gets a little bonkers. Mm-hmm. So he's in Arkham Asylum, and he's going through treatments and stuff like that.
I'm interested in how they're going to build this. Because, like, the first one, right, was this real slow burn, slowly escalating to, like, insane proportions over the course of the whole movie until, like, the tension that had been boiling over for like 2 hours finally pops. And my question is, are they going to try to recreate that? Or are they going to...
I think it's going to be a much different movie based on what I've seen in the trailer and where I've heard, from other sources is that there's a lot of music in it.
Yes. It looks like a musical. Heavy. This is what actually happens in La La Land.
Notable though, the director did come out and say it's not a musical, but music is heavily used in the movie. I don't know what that exactly means. I can pull up the exact quote.
Well, I'm gonna assume his.
Do they mean like in Godzilla Cross Kong sense, where they just throw a bunch of licensed music in there for no fucking reason?
All of his hallucinogenia are going to be set to music, and then there's going to be a couple scenes set to music over montages of city rioting and violence. That's how these things usually go.
All right, I'll bet you five internets on it.
Wow, five whole internets.
Yep. I'm a high roller, you see.
So Philip said we never really talked about it like that. I'm assuming the like talking about all the musical element to it. Never really talked about it like that, but I like to say it's a film where music is an essential element to me that doesn't veer too far from the first film. And I think people are the general consensus was that it was going to be more, they're thrown musical a lot into it, because I think they came out with a track list and they thought, oh, it's going to be them singing and doing all these dance numbers.
And you know, Lady Gaga being a part of it probably also leads people to think it might be more music based.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I was not as big a fan of the Joker as you guys were, but it was, I wouldn't be upset if they tried to do something a little different with this, especially considering that I think the way they did the first movie wouldn't work for a sequel.
Yeah.
Because you would just kind of have to reset everything. And are you going to pull the cheap card of, oh, that the whole events of the first movie was another hallucination?
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Yeah, I don't think that would work.
That would be kind of a shit thing to do.
Notably, the first Joker, I don't think, had that big of a budget. So it was like really successful when it came out. This one,
this yes, this has a much bigger budget. Like, I do remember reading that
$150 to $200 million budget.
Wow, I don't,
kind of insane for something that.
And
seems
I think
like
the first one had like 30 or something like that.
Yeah, because like this one is, it should just be like set in like Arkham Asylum and a little bit like in other like couple other locations, but I don't know where the money's going. I don't know if it's they had rewrites or
Well, I mean, they're obviously going to do big Hollywood, big like musical set pieces at least.
Yeah.
So
here's what happened, Jake, is the movie made $1 billion. And so they wanted to go big with the sequel. And they gave them more money because they're expecting another $1 billion return.
They said $60 million. $60 million was the original budget for Joker. And the Joker 2 upped it to 200. Just, you know. It's funny because it's more than Suicide Squad. I don't know what that says.
What about
says.
The Suicide Squad?
It says the Joker was received better than Suicide Squad.
I don't know what that says about society. Or hold on. Or is that the take?
That's
that
society's
got?
Taste having completely decayed.
Oh, no. Production.
Are we living there?
Oh, that was the bad.
And more people. Both like Joker and Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad and the Suicide Squad. It has more budget than both those movies.
Oh.
$175 and $185 million. I don't know what that says about society that we live in, but it says something.
It says that we live in a society with bottom text. All right.
Yeah. I can't wait for the memes to come out. We've been jonesing for a fresh batch of Joker memes.
Get the Jonkler back out here.
Dude, can we get the small Joker back? Can we get small walking?
Can we get marketable Joker plushie back?
Dude, so funny. This is top tier.
Everyone's doing it.
All right.
By everyone, I mean Magic the Gathering is like 5 years behind the curve. They finally found their...
As is tradition.
Actually, they're like 30 years behind the curve if you count Pokemon. Like, yeah, we finally have our small, fuzzy, rodent mascot. It's like, it's 2024, guys.
You missed the boat on that a bit. All righty. Let's move now to the follow-up, where we'll talk about how these movies be doing in the beginning of April. April 5th through the 7th, weekend 14 of 2024. Topping the box office once again is Godzilla Cross Kong, The New Empire, bringing in $31.2 million, down 61% week on week. So this might be the last one.
One last run at the box office, and that's fine.
I don't know. It made $369 million, so it's probably made its money back.
Yeah. I don't know. If it ends here, that's fine. Just let it be, and you got what you got exactly what you wanted out of it. We can move on to something else.
Yep. In second, we have Monkey Man, and its opening week bringing in $10 million in 3,000 theaters. 3,000 per theater take. Add another 13 or another 3 million international to bring it to 16.8 total. But more importantly, it finds itself in our spotlight. The 2024 action thriller, Dev Patel. I almost call him Dave Patel. That would be weird. Anyway, this movie is doing pretty well critically, honestly. It's got a 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 71% on Metacritic. So generally positive, but as we all know, you can't trust these mainstream. The mainstream media is out to dupe you into watching bad movies for reasons, I swear. And
I swear to
you. You can't trust them. You have to go to real people who will stand behind their reviews with usernames on the very official sounding international movie database.
The definitely not a scam of database.
Prestigious.
Yeah. Such heroes such as Sadiq 97956, his 10 out of 10 review of Monkey Man. This could be considered the best movie of the year. The shots in the movie are just incredible. With every choreography scene, you can completely feel the emotion radiating from it. I feel like I was in the driver's seat, hitting, crying, and feeling every part of this ride. With the ending, I can say this is perfect. But if there will be a sequel, I will look forward to it. The main character in the movie acting was just incredible. It really felt like he was actually feeling the emotion in every scene, actually breaking down and rebuilding as a character. I was on the edge of my seat the whole way through. Also, with the addition of culture, I can tell this movie was heavily inspired by Indian culture, with the acting and story coming as a whole. 12 out of 21 found that helpful. Really? How astute of you that you could tell that it was inspired by Indian culture.
He can read between the lines, you know. Really find it out.
I never understood that phrase. Read between the lines. It's just white space. I don't get it. Like, I'll do that here.
They're talking about these lines, Jake. You got to read between these lines.
Oh! Hot dog. Hot
dog.
Biggity dog. Monkey Man, the monkey, the monkey's fist, the monkey.
Jesus Christ,
she's stuck in a loop.
You guys know.
See, are you having a stroke,
dude,
today?
It sounds so stupid if you don't know the reference.
I know the reference. I didn't realize it took you 5 takes to get there.
You've been a little off today.
Okay. If I can just say one thing, if this movie lasts, if this and Godzilla X Kong last until May 10th, we will have 3 movies out and a boot in the box office involving monkeys.
It's Monkey May.
Monkey May, baby. Go see the 3 monkey movies back to back to back. Monkey Mayhem. Sunday, your local Regal Cinema.
Monday, Monday, Monkey Mayhem.
Monkey Monday Mayhem.
I'm going to fucking die. That's so funny.
You're going to go bananas for this offer.
Popcorn, forget it. You get a bushel of bananas the movie. Throw your peels at the screen.
It's probably cheaper than movie theater popcorn, getting an entire fucking bunch of bananas.
Sponsored by Chiquita. Chiquita Banana.
Okay. You go get your refillable banana peel.
God damn it. Dev Patel, what have you done? What have you done, sir? 1 out of 10. Movie theaters can only handle 2 monkey movies. Everybody knows that. 1 out of 10, Monkey Man. You know what I like in my movies? Monkey! Being able to see. Headline number 2. Imagine if John Wick turned out terrible. That is Monkey Man. Headline 3. John Wick x Skinamarink. What? There's not even a monkey in there.
Fucking What the fuck is Skinamarink? All right, I know it's a movie, but like
Skinamarink is like found footage horror movie
of like a Looney Tunes evil, like Looney Tunes, right? Kind of deal.
They're like, it's like child. I think it was like children's toys that were like possessed, and like they kept on turning on at night, and like again, it was like found footage, but nothing happened in the movie that was scary until the very end. So it was like, ooh, I wasn't expecting that because you're bored the entire movie. And then it's like, now we gotcha in the final minute.
So what the fuck does that have to do with Monkey Man?
I don't know. Not being able to see because like it was dark in Skinamarink.
I guess. I
anyways, most people won't get the last headline. But if you've seen Skinamarink, you know what it's like to watch a movie where you can't see anything. This movie is a complete mess from a story perspective, a filmmaking perspective, and an action perspective. Everything about it is hectic and frantic. The story doesn't go farther than most basic revenge plots. We jump from scene to scene, seemingly at random, like a monkey. I added that last bit. But by far the worst part is the action. You seriously can't see anything. It's some of the worst filmed action I've ever watched. Anyone who thinks this action is good hasn't seen good fight scenes. It's atrocious. There are constant close-ups, shaky cam, and quick cuts. Even a car chase scene will frantically jump from shot to shot, swinging the camera. A foot chase scene will have the cameraman running without a stabilizer. It's almost as if they don't want you to be able to watch. I was completely bored and basically fed up with the movie. Hoping it would be over soon, but there was still an hour left, so I did something I almost never do. Did he A, buy a banana, B, poop in his hand and throw it at the screen, C, tweet about it, or D, did he walk out?
I'm going to go with walk out.
Yeah. He walked out. I would have been surprised if it was A or B.
I was really hoping it was B.
I normally don't throw my shit at the screen, but
I've seen worse from moviegoers.
I normally tell people to make their opinions about movies, but this one is horrendous. It's not even worth watching for free if you have the streaming service that picks it up. One viewing opening Thursday, 4/4/24.
Just to drop some knowledge here, apparently there is a sequel to Skinamarink.
Is it Rinky Dink?
Skinamarinky Do Part 2.
No way.
That is the actual name.
I feel like I'm being trolled.
Jake needs to, as the helpful attendees, will come in and take care of Jake while I read this. They'll take.
Unfortunately, I lack the creativity to make something like that up.
Dude, that's incredible. That's so smart.
When the Skinamarinky Do makes his presence known at a new home, a plush child's toy falls victim to its nefarious plan. Oh my god. It has a 5.8.
Can I share this picture?
That's a whole star more than the original, yeah. So I guess they learned it something at least. There's one user review.
Oh, damn. Bear? Yo, Paddington would never.
Paddington is in shambles right now.
This is bear-on-bear violence.
Why does Teddy Bear have blood in it?
Why do Teddy Bear have blood in it?
You'll have to watch Skinamarinky-Doo Part 2 in this home. What? Well, in this home what? In this home, Skinamarinky Do Part 2 finds you.
All right. While Jake has the beans drained out of him, he's so full of beans, I'm going to read this one from Sal Connect. 4 out of 10. Netflix was right for once. It took Liam Neeson an almost perfect action film like Taken to change the course of his career. A 30-second misleading trailer wouldn't make Dev Patel an action hero. While I didn't hate the film, I still feel that I wasted my money on watching Monkey Man. The pacing is slow, and the story has been tried and tested so many times in Indian cinema that even they have stopped making films on this theme. I like Dev Patel as an actor, but this film feels like a desperate effort to relive the success of Slumdog Millionaire. It follows the same template, too. Other reviewers have also pointed out that the portrayal of the underprivileged intersex community turning into Indian ninjas is implausible. How could they achieve such skills? The leader is portrayed as a born philosopher, but it's unclear whether he received any formal education or was well-read. There are at least 20 minutes when I almost lost my patience and nearly walked out. My advice? Wait for it to drop on streaming. End quote. There was no beginning quote.
Okay.
I did intentionally gloss over it. I just read right through it. Because he that just put it some, right in there. And
that took some unexpected turns. But fuck that noise. I'm going to get the truth here from Sujeef Janish with his 10 out of 10 review of Monkey Man. If you are of South Asian descent, you must watch this. No excuses. Absolutely amazing and a long overdue strong South Asian lead. If you are South Asian or of South Asian descent, this film is a must-watch. Its action scenes are amazing, crisp, and gritty. Its themes are both in your face and hidden in the background. Every shot is meticulously crafted perfectly. It's also a compelling story with many problems in India, including poverty, transgenderism, and Modi Prime Minister, etc. This also took a racist turn. These themes are understandable to lay audiences, but it truly is such a cultural experience growing up Indian American. I have never felt so represented in a movie. Truly an astonishing feat for Dev Patel in an action movie of all flicks. So I take it this person has never seen RRR.
I guess not.
Let's see what. Nope, this is the only movie they've reviewed. They've had an account for a week. This is the first movie they've watched, just overall, which makes sense as to why they would review it like that.
I have an update on Skinamarinky Doo Part 2.
Oh, please drop it.
It's a parody, but the one review that reviewed it said it's a higher quality than the original.
It seemed to be.
yeah. So. Maybe worth a watch. After we talk to Jaydeep Mehta, why he thinks 1 out of 10, and why he thinks a monkey made man movie. This was one of the worst movie from last 2 to 3 years. Wasted my precious time in theater. ... Dev Patel takes himself way too seriously in this misguided action film. There is actually a line in the film where a character asks him, "Don't you want to sleep?" And without making eye contact, in a sweat, he pauses and says, "I never sleep." The story is all over the place, as if they had cool scene ideas and forced them together with little to no cohesion. The action is good in parts and terrible in others. The shaky cam is definitely a style choice, but after a while it gets annoying and nauseating. The training montage alone was enough to get me busting out laughing. Without spoiling too much, Dev Patel starts punching a big bag of rice in his poor religious combine, gets super sweaty, takes his shirt off, because why not, and beats all of the rice out of it. Meanwhile, everyone in the combine is cheering for him and praising him for how great he is. What's his connection to them? No idea. Why do they care? Also unsure. Oh, and the combine he's at is a Muslim trans community, the inhabitants of which join him in the fight later
as ninjas
and murder people.
As we learn.
Yes, I'm serious. Could have been hilarious if they played it off as humor, but they didn't. It's all very serious. In my screening, most people seemed bored and uninterested. A handful of people were still sleeping. Random stories and politics and religion out of nowhere. ... 24 out of 59 found that helpful.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Finally, from Greggy Dowd. 4 out of 10. Disappointed. That was very lackluster. I know. I'm sorry. I apologize to Xena Warrior Princess. Take the shaky camera fight scenes from a decade ago, some training montage that is weak, a story that is unoriginal, and leave out almost all the fun, and you have Monkey Man. This movie needs better lighting, much better writing, and fight direction that isn't just a poor John Wick imitation that tries to hide its sins by shaking the camera all around. Between the Wick movies, the Equalizer franchise, anything with Jason Statham fighting in it, is it 100 movies yet? And many Bollywood action movies, the standards have been set. Monkey Man falls short of those standards. And the movie doesn't make up for it in story, humor, or effects. Is it the worst? No, there's plenty of action, but it's not done that well. 3 out of 10. Found that one helpful. There you have it. There you have it. In your hand. You can hold it. In your hands.
Yes, that's Monkey Man. Down another spot this week is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, bringing in $9 million in its third week. Down another 42.2%, already out of 510 theaters. Oof. $140 million worldwide gross. The First Omen opens in fourth with $8.353 million. Walt Disney. Interesting. I did not realize that this was a Disney-produced Omen flick. What a world we live in. In fifth, we have Kung Fu Panda 4, raking in $7.7 million in its fifth week. That's pretty strong back-end performance for Kung Fu Panda 4, as it crosses $420 million worldwide. Dune Part 2, in its sixth week, falls three spots, bringing in $7.4 million, but only down 34.5% week on week. That has made $668 million worldwide. Over the big 650.
It's gonna, yeah. What was the movie we were saying this was gonna parlay into? I don't know.
I mean, I think it already
I think it was at least, Godzilla X Kong, but it might outlast it. Well, maybe not. Yeah. I don't know. I don't see Godzilla X Kong, like, dying out super quick.
Well, if it drops another 61% next week.
Yeah. I guess it remains to be seen.
Someone Like You opened in seventh with $2.979 million, so a big drop up off there. Arthur the King, inexplicably still in theaters, still in the top 10 even, $1.5 million, down 37.8% week on week. In ninth, down four spots, is Immaculate, which only brought in $1.39 million in its third week. Just $20 million worldwide for that movie, but I'm sure it didn't cost anything to make. And leaping, just catapulting into the top 10 from 26th, we have Wicked Little Letters.
Little Letters.
Is up 1,648.3% week on week.
Oh my God.
It opened in 997 more theaters.
Fucking shout out to the one it's not the Chinese theater, right? Like, there's got to be like one or two premiering theaters that, like, yes, we put it in the box office technically.
It might be like a local theater for the director that they kind of rent out to premiere their film. I know that Danny DeVito did that when he made From Mama from the Train. One of the premiere theater was in Asbury Park.
Okay.
Actually was in that theater listening to Danny DeVito tell that story.
Oh. Yeah, went up from five theaters. Yeah. At least last week.
The pre-screening, yeah. But yeah, no, it's it made its big wide debut. And for those who haven't heard it like us, don't know what this is about, when people in Littlehampton, little Hampton, including conservative local Edith, begin to receive letters full of hilarious profanities. Rowdy Irish immigrant Rose is charged with the crime. Suspecting that something is amiss, the town's women investigate. Seems like a fun little, maybe indie. I guess it's Sony Pictures releasing, but I don't know if it's.
It's I mean, smaller budget, I'm sure.
Yeah. So.
Cool. Yeah, of course they blame the Irish fucking bastards. All right. Let's move on now to gaming news.
Yep.
I'll start because I finally get to do a thing on one of my pet games. Peter's games get all the updates and love, but mine don't. Until today, Slay the Spire 2's coming, baby. Early access in 2025. Let's fucking go.
If Slay the Spire is so good, where's Slay the Spire 2? It's coming out.
Yeah. I'm actually a little surprised that they would make a sequel to it. And well, in some ways, I'm surprised they'd make a sequel, but I thought they would probably just use the base game to like
put an expansion,
add
on top.
More stuff to it. But like they didn't. They kind of completely remade the game, and the trailer makes it seem like the budget for this game is definitely much bigger than the original. This is supposedly set like 1,000 years after the original Slay the Spire. So, the people who appear to be the Ironclad and the Silent are likely descendants. But there's a new character, Gonor the Defect and the Watcher, and there's now a skeleton, a flaming skeleton person with a giant scythe.
Okay.
So, I'm excited for that. It's only going to be in early access in 2025, so there's going to be a lot of balance changes and updates.
Good,
because the original Slay the Spire was in early access in 2017 and didn't get officially released till 2 years later. I've got Hades 2 coming out to tide me over into 2025. And I'll have Slay the Spire again, and it'll be like 2020 all over again.
Yeah. I'm glad that's getting, obviously I'm glad it's getting balanced time. Games like this thrive on the pristine balance of all the elements.
That was really what makes Slay the Spire so good, is that it's just so perfectly balanced.
That gives a lot of avenues for replayability, so I'm glad they're putting in the time there. I've got one. I could talk about the Risk of Rain update that's coming out. It's a new map, a new skin, and 2 new artifacts. Nah, I don't care. We'll play when it comes out.
The artifacts do.
It's coming soon. They didn't put a date on it. Gearbox.
Man got so excited about talking about Slay the Spire, he turned it on. He manifested it.
I did.
Yeah.
For the rest of this, Kurt will be multitasking Slay the Spire.
I accidentally
doing an A20 run while we're here.
Trying to bring up the news about the the sequel.
What I am going to talk about is, because we were kind of interested in it last week, it's here, and it's good content. It's the 20th BAFTA Games Awards.
Yay.
I didn't know. We only learned about them last year, but apparently they've been going since 2004.
Cool.
So here's the winners for the 2024 BAFTA Awards. Kind of in alphabetical order, not in order of, most important award. I guess they would have done on the event, not on the site, but in alphabetical.
There's no award more important than the others.
Alphabetical order. Animation, the winner, Hi-Fi Rush. The winner for Artistic Achievement, Alan Wake 2. The winner for Audio Achievement, Alan Wake 2. Best game, so the BAFTA Game of the Year is Baldur's Gate 3, giving it got the gamer version of an EGOT, I guess. Yeah. That was its own story, yeah.
That's very,
because they won like the Games Awards, the BAFTA Games Awards, and a couple of other like really high profile gaming yearly awards. So they got the sweep.
Wow.
First in history, I think, to do that. Best British game, Viewfinder. Best debut game, Venba. Best evolving game, Cyberpunk 2077, taking it over No Man's Sky. My heart.
Get fucked.
Best family game, Super Mario Bros. Wonder. The Game Beyond Entertainment. Let me see what that's about.
The Game Beyond War Games.
What does that mean? Let me see if I can't find that. What the fuck? You know what? I don't care. We're going to keep going. I guess it's like not just the video game. It's about the experience. I'm sure it's something like that. Best game design is Dave the Diver. Best multiplayer, Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Best music, Baldur's Gate 3. Best narrative, Baldur's Gate 3. Best new intellectual property, Viewfinder. Best performer in a leading role, Najee Jeter for his role as Miles in Marvel's Spider-Man 2. Best performer in a supporting role, Andrew Wincott as Raphael in Baldur's Gate 3. And best technical achievement, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. And finally, the EE Player's Choice is Baldur's Gate 3.
Nice. But did Baldur's Gate 3 win anything?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Is it even a good game?
It remains to be seen. So, I mean, not too different from the American Game Awards.
No, I wouldn't expect them to be, honestly.
Yeah. Viewfinder is a game I've not heard a lot about. Like, obviously the indie ones are, you know, they're getting a big spotlight because of this. But, yeah, mostly Mario Bros., a little bit of Legend of Zelda, and Baldur's Gate 3. And if you just Google it, it'll give you the full list of all the nominees, too. And I was not reading that shit out. We do not have time for that.
No. Yeah, that was a good call.
Did you guys talk about Star Wars Outlaws last week?
No.
I don't know.
We did not.
All right, cool. Let me see if I can find a news article while I'm
not super interested in it, to be honest.
So, Star Wars Outlaws, made by Ubisoft, came out with their full trailer. I watched it. It looked fine, but with the trailer, they also came out with their price breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't know if this is going to be the breaking point. So, okay, I'll preface this with this is both good and bad at the same time. I think I remember enough from the bad parts. So the bad parts is $70 game is the lowest tier you can, not the lowest tier, lowest tier you can buy it as. Then it goes up to a staggering $110. And that includes some DLC content. You have like locked
missions. I would fucking hope so.
you have locked missions that are a part of it, as well as, like, I think there's some other cosmetic stuff that you get as well. Mm. So that really sucks. That's what I think has a lot of people grinding their teeth over, is the sheer amount of exclusive content that they locked behind stuff. And the final one is $130. So you're paying $60 more?
Jesus. Yeah, almost double.
The Ultimate Edition is $130. You have the base game pre-order bonus, which is a cosmetic pack for your speeder and a cosmetic for the Trailblazer spaceship. It's all cosmetics.
What a great value.
The Gold Edition, so the 110 and the 130 both get you 3-day early access, and you have the season pass. What the Ultimate Edition gets you is the Rogue Infiltrator Bundle, which is cosmetics for Kay, Nyx, the speeder, and Trailblazer spaceship. The Sabacc Shark Bundle, which is more cosmetics. And the Digital Art Book.
Ooh. Oh, not even a real art book. It's just a bunch of... It's a PDF.
God.
So that's what you get. And the standard edition, you just get the pre-order bonus and the base game.
I swear these days, if you're way into AAA games these days, I feel like you're just building yourself an Ozymandias fucking castle of sand. Like you're gonna reach the end of your life on this earth, and you're gonna look around and all the shit that you put your time and your work into, and maybe, you know, if you're a Buddhist monk who believes in the transience of all things, great, because everything you buy is just gonna turn into digital waste. It's all like, there's guys who has, imagine someone who buys like all these, like some whale who's like buys all these pre-order editions, and they have all these very, very content full versions of games that they don't play anymore. Like, I can't even play my entire Steam library. And so, like, I'm wasting money there. And that's just buying, like, $10, $15 games at a clip, you know? Just amazing how much money you can just sink into a game like this.
So, now that I've hit you with the bad, and I've basically offered you shit,
now you can sell me.
No-brainer deal. Yeah. Now here's a sell. Here's a sell that I've baited you, and now I'm gonna hook you like you're a little fish ready to be caught. Day one with Ubisoft Plus Ultimate Edition base game pre-order bonus 3 days early access season pass Rogue Infiltrator bundle Sabacc Shark bundle digital art book included with Ubisoft Plus 100 plus PC games including new releases only $18 a month. Welcome to subscription services, everybody. This is just Ubisoft, though.
This is a single player game, right?
Yeah, I mean, it sucks that, like, okay. I mean, I pay for Game Pass, and I find it to be a pretty reasonable value.
I don't know what else is on Ubisoft Plus, but you know, maybe this is something you keep around for a couple months, but. I mean, hey, this is a game you can buy for $18 now. Cancel after a month.
Yeah, when you're done playing it.
Wow. Like, yeah. You know, it's I kind of have taken this on an adage, especially in the last couple of years. I almost feel at this point like the more the video game costs, the more likely it is to be, like, not even just not worthwhile, but just bad. Like, I think Helldivers might be the most expensive game I've bought in the last, like, 3 years.
And it's not even the premium price of, AAA games or AA games.
Yeah, it's not a full price game.
Because there's really good games. There's games that deliver much more entertainment to me for a much lower price.
I think this is good to have like this price point at like the Ubisoft. I mean, you can play Prince of Persia, Avatar, Frontiers of Pandora, Skull and Bones, whatever. If one of these piques your interest,
yeah, you get to play a quad A game for $18.
Yeah, right. It's a bonus. It's a bonus perk on top of your Star Wars game or vice versa. Star Wars is a bonus on top of your, I don't know, if you want to play Rayman Jungle Run or Rayman Fiesta Run, you can get those. What I don't like about this is with Game Pass, now Ubisoft Plus, I'm assuming, what if there's going to be an Epic Games subscription next? Are we going to have an EA
subscription? There already is an EA subscription, and the base tier is actually included with Game Pass.
Okay. I guess I don't know which ones are included with what, but if you have all these different like game companies who are going to be putting their subscriptions out, you're having the same issue that we're having with streaming services where you got Netflix, Hulu, Disney+, HBO Max, Prime Video. You have all of these things that are adding up to be the same as like a cable package, and now every month we're paying the cable package, or every month in this case we might be paying like the price of like a new game, like a Game Pass plus this is $18. That's the $29, almost $30 a month, you know, add two more on there, you're buying a new game every single month to have all these subscription services.
Well, I mean, that's if you want to have all of them concurrent. Like, you could play the game of, all right. And in some ways, like, I'm more so an advocate rather fiercely for actually owning the shit that you buy.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
But I will say that for some people, it makes a lot of financial sense to, instead of, you know, buying a game for $70 that you'll play for like a month, have like, if your the company of your choice has a subscription service, sign up for the month, play that game for that month,
set a reminder and to cancel in a month,
sever ties.
And I think that is the way to go about it, is do a couple at a time. Like, I got Game Pass for Halo and then I deleted it. I think I actually bought Halo as well, but so I think I used Game Pass for a little bit without needing it, but yeah, you don't, you know, you don't need them all the time, you know, but if you are playing a game that's on there, subscribe while you're playing it, and then when you eventually lose interest or whatever, if it's a couple months on the road, it's inevitably cheaper than, like, not, like, buying the game outright at this point. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... and then you can play Rayman Jungle Run as well. So that's Star Wars Outlaws.
Yeah. Speaking of running, Runaway Dolls.
Drive Away Dolls,
that's the one. I don't care. This movie forced me not to care.
I thought this was going to be a good movie.
Guys, I was confused about something. Could you clear it up? Were the main characters of this movie lesbians? I couldn't tell. If only the movie had reminded me every 3 minutes, I think that would have helped it sink in for me.
You know, I was thinking during this movie, I'm like, you know what? Good for the gays. Like, they're really making the proverbial, like, I don't know, what's the straight version of this movie? Like, they're getting their own. But then I'm like, wait, there isn't a straight version of this movie, because, like,
I don't think so.
There's way too much, like, sex and stuff.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
my God, yeah.
It's like super gratuitous throughout the entire movie. I'm like, if this was, like, a straight movie, people would have the same issues. Like, hey, they're fucking, like, every other scene. This is weird.
Is it, like, was it, like, a pastiche of, like, LGBTQ culture in the 90s? Like,
no, it couldn't have been, because as my girlfriend kept pointing out, there wouldn't have been all these places for them to go in all these areas. And like, they could have, it wouldn't have, it's just so weird. Also, I think we should point out, and this is a spoiler, so if you don't want to be spoiled, get the fuck out. This movie's bad, don't bother.
Oh no, I'm spoiled for Drive Away Dolls.
The fucking plot of the movie revolves around a case of dildos.
Yeah.
It's so fucking stupid. This movie is so dumb. And I wanted to like it. I really did. I was like, it's a Coen Brothers movie. The premise seems like,
well,
it could be interesting.
Not a Coen Brothers movie.
Oh, Coen Brother. My bad. Ethan. So I guess we know where the talent in that family is. Because it seemed like for the first 5 minutes of this movie, he was challenging himself to use the worst fucking camera shots he could possibly conceive.
Yeah, this is... I feel like this was all the indulgences of Coen Brothers movies that work well in the other ones because they've been put in moderate doses and used to further the story, are used here kind of as their own just like flashbang pizzazz. It feels like an imitation of other Coen Brothers movies. Like almost a parody of them. Like, we have the almost the superfluous, like, psychedelic montage scenes that just kind of show up out of nowhere.
Hey, what was that?
That was, I believe, the senator's.
What the fuck?
That was, I don't know what that was. I'm led to believe that was the senator's memories of him being high and having the cast taken. why it shows up.
Blastercaster.
Why it shows up
by Miley Cyrus
third of the way into the movie when the like when it doesn't pay off until way later, and even then, it doesn't connect to anything going on. Like if I were to watch that back and see those scenes, it still wouldn't fit. Yeah, we have the overly verbose Southern character from Oh Brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we have the bickering, we have the bickering, bumbling, problem solvers. Kind of, I mean, that's kind of, it's a
Fixers?
Little stretch to call it like yeah. Big Lebowski, but they're very Coen Brothers esque. This is all, like it's all the flavor with none of the substance. That being said, I think the one thing I did like about this movie was not, again, not even specifically the writing, but honestly, like the chemistry between the main actresses.
I don't know that I agree.
I do agree.
Like their relationship was not written well, but like the actual acting of the two main actresses, I think sold it for me.
I wanted a little bit more Suki, to be honest.
I thought the God, I forget her name, but she was in Blockers. I thought she was not great in this movie.
There's Jamie and Marianne, who are the two girls going south.
Marianne. I don't feel that she had a very strong performance in this movie at all.
I mean, I think she played her part. I mean, she was like
she does a very good job of being really standoffish right at the start, and being really abrasive, and then by the end, like she does. Like I feel like she does open up, and.
She's very closed off in the beginning. Like she doesn't even want to go on a date with a guy. I mean, I don't know what her sexuality is, if she's bi or anything like that, but I'm assuming full.
I mean, I would assume lesbian because I was told that 19 times in the movie.
Well, I mean, you know.
She said a couple of dykes and a couple of lesbians on multiple occasions.
Okay.
Yeah. They're.
But yeah, I mean, I think she was very standoffish and did a good job like portraying herself.
But
like,
is that
closed?
Hard to portray? That's what I'm saying. Like I don't really see there wasn't as much range as.
I mean, hard or not, I think she did a good job of doing it. I mean, I don't. It seemed like it was consistent throughout the movie until her character arc started to arc, and then she opened up to Jamie. To kind of like let herself in. Yeah. I mean, it's not. It's not very deep. It's not like it's a very thick romance or like
they squeeze.
I guess romance.
This does feel like an extra long like HBO movie.
Yeah.
That found its way on a Peacock instead of like Cinemax.
I mean, there's also like red flag galore. Like if you want to talk about it from like a relationship purpose out of the context of like it being a comedy, you have Jamie who was in a relationship with Suki and Marianne who's helping her like get her shit out of like her apartment. So you have this girl who's friends with another girl who knows that she just cheated on her girlfriend and they want to do this impromptu trip. And then after a series of wacky adventures, Jamie teaches her how to like open
by a series
one wacky
yeah, and
adventure.
By a series we mean like two.
Yeah, it's like it not a lot, and then
not
on
even.
Top of that, you're intersplicing it with like them going to the basement party, and then just like introducing her to just like making out with a bunch of other people that clearly makes her uncomfortable to the point of where she wants to leave.
Right.
Yeah, like Jamie's awful to her.
Like
the entire movie, and then the romantic payoff is so completely unearned.
No, then the one good thing was that when she did romance her, and like it was very short, and she did a couple cute things for her, and then they just speed run to like.
Then the plot comes fucking crashing back in.
And then, yeah, the plot is like, oh yeah, we have a story to tell.
Yeah.
We forgot. We forgot we have this case full of penises in a box.
I really would
have
almost liked it. Like, I guess it's a good I guess it works better as if you pay off the joke, but I honestly thought it was going to be like the case from fucking Pulp Fiction, where they just never show what's in it.
I mean, that would have been better.
That would have been much better.
Yeah, like, this movie wants to be more than what it is. It falls short of its aspirations, I think. Like, the way this movie is set up, it also feels like it kind of wants to be like a Blues Brothers thing, where it's a bunch of kind of separate parties all converging through wacky hijinks until it reaches one critical mass at the final location. You know, that's kind of what that's what I feel like what the story wanted to do, but they never do that.
Yeah.
It just sort of fizzles out at the end.
Like, it should have been a combination of like the senator meeting with the goons, meeting with the girls to try to like get the penis back or whatever.
We're only introduced to the senator through a fucking billboard. And we're supposed to care that he's got a cast of his penis like, out there? Oh no.
Yeah, I guess spoilers. Side note, you don't need to watch this movie. It's one of the weaker entries in Coen filmography. The fact that like when they show the billboard, like usually that's a setup for he's going to play a minor role in the ending of the film, like him or the situation. And it's a Matt Damon cameo or whatever.
And I also want to point out it takes 40 minutes for the plot to kind of like even take shape.
Yeah. This movie,
like, they don't discover that they're transporting anything until 40 fucking minutes into this 80 minute movie.
Yeah. That's really the big thing here, I think, for me, is that, I mean, for my benefit, very nice, but for the movie's benefit, the fact that it is an hour and 24 minutes. So 90 minutes by the most exacting definition. That's such like, and it makes a very tight budget for story economy, and it is not spent well. The pacing is very misallocated. I think that's its biggest sin.
I don't know about its biggest sin, but that's certainly one of them.
it unglues the story from itself. And not in a good way, where like, you know, some Coen Brothers movies have that free-flowing, meandering feel to them, where it's not so strictly defined by story beats. It's not slavish to a story structure, right? But this is not a good example of that. This is, instead of free-flowing, I would just say loose.
Yeah.
Not cohesive.
That's definitely one way to put it.
This reminds me of a gay version of what was it, Hot Rod or not Hot Rod? What was the
just say words about the movie and we'll probably figure it out.
Shit, there was a guy in a donut mascot costume at the end where he got shot.
Black Dynamite.
They like stole. They stole the.
I kind of remember that. Oh,
they stole a brother's car and they met a guy through like they met a guy in like going on Rumspringer.
Like, oh, Sex Drive?
Sex Drive, yeah. Because it's a road trip, sex capade kind of thing. And I was trying to compare this to like this. What's the straight version of this? Like the most gratuitous version. And even that, like the sexual explicit scenes were like few and far between, or not as frequent as this one, but they were less gratuitous, and it was, I don't know.
And for as comedic as the rest of the movie is, they never play they never play the sex for comedy, but they do. That's the first scene in the movie, is a joke about how Sookie is cheating on her, right?
Jamie's cheating on
Sookie. Yeah.
Because, you know, all lesbians are super promiscuous.
Yeah, I don't think it... I'm also thinking about it in, like, a... if you think about it in, like, a equality, like, viewpoint. Like, what is this trying to do? It's trying to make a gay comedy that is, like, the gay version of a lot of, like, straight movies that are allowed to do this and get away with it. But it missed the point and jumped the shark. It's like, one, you're painting like people in...
It forgot to put comedy in it.
You're painting them in like in a bad light by saying they're like really promiscuous and cheating on each other, and like also just going to makeout parties, and that's just being okay with
it is
other.
A question that, again, I could take a stab at, but it would be ultimately above not my question to answer whether this truly rises above the level of exploitation. It does. It's in serious doubt in my mind. It's a serious gray area.
I'd say it's pretty close in there. Because it's just so in your face the entire movie, and that's like what the movie is about essentially. And
normally, I don't care. I'm generally a
sex positive
person too, which is like, this is the surprising thing. That's the thing I'm complaining about, is that there's like too many like gratuitous.
Well,
scenes.
It's like The Room. Like, there's just so much sex in it, and it does nothing to further anything.
Purpose.
It's just in there, and just like the fucking psychedelic, the psychedelic transition things that serve no purpose, and just
in your 90-minute
like,
movie,
weird,
spending about 10 minutes of that runtime dedicated to like that 70s show level intercards.
Yeah, and like the thing about this movie that really bugged me, there was this weird stylistic choice where like every time something. Anything was about to like happen, it would smash cut to some other
the
bullshit.
Most goofy PowerPoint ass over the. It's like a 90s maximalism like transitional thing of 90s scene transitions that didn't work then.
Yeah,
and I'm like, just, are you trying to make a statement with these? Like that it's like we're trying to set us in the time period by using a like. A chop cut, like a swing chop cut to the next scene. That again, these are the knives with which they butcher the pacing by literally cutting every scene apart from each other. Like it does feel like, and part of me was like, all right, maybe this is artistic intent, but maybe it's bad. I'm not sure. I'm not a smarty pants. But then they get to the scene where they're having the dinner, and I'm watching them cut between these two, like a bunch of different angles, and there's champagne that is front and center in the scene. It's actually the focus of the scene that they get this champagne and they're having this explicit sexual conversation over the guy pouring them the champagne, and they continue it on. But the continuity between the shots is awful. That's a very like. Clear and explicit like error that is a cinema sin ding that the continuity of the and I wouldn't even rag on it's like okay continuity errors yes that happens but I usually don't catch them that's how subtle they are but this was a continuity error of the main like symbol and item in a very condensed scene where the things of focus are the two women and the two glasses of champagne. And the two glasses of champagne jump levels in between every one of the 20 cuts in that scene.
Yeah.
And not even like an Austin Powers like gag joke way. It's just they didn't.
Yeah. And at least the Austin Powers ones had the decency to be short.
Yeah. And they would escalate. It's like it was. So it wasn't a gag. It was just a mistake. It was just a continuity mistake, which for like liquids, I feel like is super easy to check.
Yeah, it's
so that kind of cemented to me that like this was not these were the issues with this movie are more likely unintentional than not unforced.
Yeah, I just don't think this was a movie that was made with a lot of care, which is weird to me, but
coming from a Coen brother.
Yeah, there is one laugh that I got out of this movie, and it took the entire movie to tell. It's the payoff or the callback rather to the first scene in the movie where Pedro Pascal's character is like this obvious detective noir scene where he's in the bar and he's like holding onto the case and they're out to get him and he checks the door and you know, he checks himself. It's like okay, that's a tense beginning to a movie. It's like, okay, this is kind of what I expected. But at the end of the movie, it's Matt Damon's character reenacting the same stuff, but now in a glittery pink gay bar. I was like, oh yeah, okay, that's kind of funny. I like that callback.
Nice.
Because you now you understand the whole context. So that did get a chuckle out of me, I will say. But yeah, I don't think there's a lot of a huge audience for this. It's mercifully short.
Yeah, I'll give it that. That's probably the best thing about it, is that it's short. Yeah,
it didn't drag on too long.
But I mean, well, like, it kind of did drag on, but it didn't have a lot of length to drag us. So
yeah. had to be a feature length movie.
Technically,
yeah,
very technically a feature length movie. Just like this is very technically a feature length podcast now. So, we are slightly longer than Drive Away Dolls. Next week we'll be back at you with probably Fallout.
Yeah.
And after that, we'll see. But until then, be well, stay safe, and party like it's 1995.
Peace.
Bye-bye.